Yeah, you got to start early.
Oh, pound goals. By the way, I'm filming. You guys don't even know. I just hit play. Oh. So, the people know this is real. you guys are very cute. Welcome, Toya, and welcome, Ahmad, to the Sober Butterfly podcast. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate you guys, and you both stood out to me at PodFest. I got to shout you out because you bought me a non-alcoholic drink at this after party. That was at the conference, and I was just so appreciative. It came out of nowhere. I was about to leave, and then Toya ran up to me, and she's like, oh, wait, you can't leave. I have a drink for you. And I just thought it was so sweet how you thought about me, because I think often, and Ahmad is sober, so maybe you can also speak to this, Ahmad. Like, sometimes in social settings specifically, you kind of feel left out. Like, you kind of feel like the forgotten. Like, you know, like, there's nothing necessarily here for me, but I can't express how much that really meant to me. Like, you went the extra mile to, like, look out. So I really appreciate that.
Of course. Yeah,
that's your gift, Toy. Always helping people out. Like, that's her thing. You know, she's always looking out for people. And when I found out that you were, you know, you didn't drink alcohol, I was like, what? I'm not alone here.
Because he's always
out here.
I'm always the only one, you know? So I thought it was really cool knowing that someone who is open to drinking non-alcoholic beverages, you know, like a Heineken Zero, you know, because sometimes you carry that around, you know, people might give you a funny look.
Yes.
But I was like, okay, well, now two of us are getting the funny looks, you know? So
I was joking last week on my show, because I was like, I want to walk around all day with a name tag like we had at the conference that just says, hi, I'm sober. Because my podcast has the name Sober in it. So people automatically know that I'm talking about sobriety, which is really nice. Yeah. And it kind of lowers people's defenses. And I don't think that we would have found that connection had I not worn the name tag, because like you said, like, you don't know who's sober, like, you don't expect people to be sober, but immediately you were like, whoa, you don't drink, I don't drink. And that was just so amazing, like, to make that connection, especially because, like, in a big event space like that, like, for sober people, that can be a little ostracizing, it can be isolating. And I always tell people, like, people are sober for a variety of reasons. I myself use my platform to advocate for the various reasons in which people are sober. I'm very candid about my struggles with addiction. That's why I'm sober, and like how much sobriety has heightened my lifestyle and optimized everything and made me healthier and happier. But I'm curious, Ahmad. So Ahmad is sober. What led you to sobriety? Like, I'm very curious to learn a little bit more about your story and your history.
Wow. So first, your story is always the most powerful story of all. When we're thinking about sobriety, because that type of transformation is just phenomenal. And it's always a miracle and a half to be in the presence of someone who has that type of strength to do that.
Thank you so much.
First of all, like, so my story is nothing compared to anyone that walks your shoes.
Don't diminish it though. Like, don't diminish it. We haven't even heard it yet.
So, you know, I started drinking, like, you know, teenage years. You know, my parents gave me the wine cooler. I was living in Bermuda at the time, and like, you know, you're old enough, you're 13 now, and hey,
take a sip,
right? You know, it's like, all right, this is good. Take a sip of beer. I'm never gonna drink beer ever again in my life, right?
So
I think, like, that's how it kind of started for me, where was just like the little foodie drinks, you know. And I think that's how a lot of us start, right? As you know, kids,
when whatever, you're young,
you know,
yeah.
when you're young. So, but I was never, I think because of that, I never was a big drinker, because I grew up in the house where my parents were social drinkers. You know, they had a couple of drinks before they go to bed every night. But as I got older, I realized that I didn't drink as much as they did. Like, they were daily drinkers, but they never really got drunk. And
they always
had
a nightcap.
Yeah, they always had a nightcap.
That was a little thing. It is their thing.
Yeah.
You know? I'm glad you brought it up.
That's right.
Yep. My dad is sober now.
So. Oh, your dad's sober too?
Yes.
That's incredible. What was that parallel like? So did you all get sober around the same time?
We did, but I didn't know it. Oh, so wow. I had bought them a gift for Christmas where they can actually make their own beer at home. And because like, they were big beer drinkers, you know, and it's like the Super Bowl was coming. So I bought them this, and it was like, borderline offensive to them.
Wow.
I was like, yeah. I didn't know that you all didn't drink anymore. My mom still drinks, but my dad didn't. So, so that's how I found out, was just a few years ago, that my dad became sober around about the same time that I did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was strange because, you know, like I remember the last couple of drinks that I've had, right? And a caveat is, you know, there were moments where I drank a little too much, and you always say I'll never drink again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had like those moments, but I never thought that I would stop drinking, and it wasn't intentional. I wasn't trying to. It was just one day I had like a strawberry-ta, right? It was something like that, right?
Little wine cooler.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Something like, you know, lightweight, right? And I was home alone, and I took a sip out of it. And Nadine, I promise you, I feel like it was like I had a panic attack.
Wow.
Yeah, it was strange. And I blamed it on the beer. Mm-hmm. I blamed it on it. I said, you know what, this, maybe it's the brand, maybe it's the way how they mixed it. You know, I said, I don't want to drink this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another weekend comes by, and so this time I bought a beer, you know, a six pack of beer. The same thing happened. It's like, wow. I had a panic attack. And so I ended up, you know, pouring all the beer out. And so then I told Toy, I said, you know, I think I'm done drinking beer. I said, it's not sitting well with me. It's how I'm describing it. But I'm not really telling anyone it's giving me a panic attack. Like,
okay.
It's mentally bothering me. It's a mental thing. Mm-hmm. And this is really the first time I'm really mentioning it on your show, actually. Let someone know, like, boy, this is her first time hearing me saying, like, this was a mental thing. It was this detail here, it was a mental disruption. Mm-hmm. Like, it mentally downed me.
Mm-hmm.
So I told Toy, I said, man, this beer is just not sitting well with me. Just kind of making it seem like maybe it's the weed or whatever, the fermentation. So then I said, okay, I'll just only drink hard liquor and wine. And, mm-hmm. I drank hard liquor. Same experience.
Mm-hmm.
And this is over months.
Yeah, this is over months.
Okay,
The next weekend. Yeah. This is like, you know, I stopped drinking beer and then I just don't touch it until like 3 months later. And then it's like, okay, let me try hard liquor. You know,
okay.
I'm like, look.
Yeah.
So I try hard liquor and it's like, I'm tripping, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I said, oh, Toy, I said, okay, hard liquor is off the table.
Right.
It's bothering me, right? And then, so this is like a year and a half later, I said, okay, well, let me try red wine.
Right.
Yep, going down the list.
Yeah. So we're at red wine, and I finally drink it with some pizza, and I said, okay, this is working for me. And I tell my parents and I'm drinking wine and they ended up buying me for my birthday a box of wine.
A whole box,
yeah.
to the house. Like,
right.
Six bottles, I mean, you know, different, just they're just like, hey, so
different,
you know,
styles of wine.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm very well versed. That was my go-to gift for people.
Okay, you get it, right? So because, you know, we're going to vineyards, I'm living it up. I was,
yeah,
like, okay, I can drink
I found my thing.
Yeah.
Nadine. 2 weeks after I got my birthday wine, I ended up giving it all away.
Yep.
Wow. Well, kudos for you. I would have drunk all the birthday wine in those 2 weeks. But good. Yeah. I get it. You're like, no.
It's just would not, for some reason, and I'm a man of faith, so I don't know what the reason is, but I just give credit to God for taking the alcohol away from my life. Because sometimes you hear Christians will say, you know, God took the taste of alcohol. Like, no, I still want the taste.
Yeah.
I still want the taste. I just don't want the alcohol that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. And it's something,
like there's something about that alcohol that's just not resonating with my soul. Yeah. It's really the best way I can describe it, because I feel like the soul is where your emotions are, right? So it's like, my emotions, my mindset, my soul is not resonating with alcohol.
Wow. And
so that is completely out. I don't even have a desire. And if I ever get a sip of it by accident, it's like, I'm upset. Like, yeah. how my parents were. It's like,
yeah, I put
this in my drink.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how I came to be sober, is not an effort at all. It just went away. So whatever the reason for that, I'm keep walking this thing out, and whatever the purpose is, I hope to fulfill it, you know? So
no, that's super powerful and relatable, believe it or not, even for me, because there's an expression that says, like, first God whispers at you, or like first life whispers at you and then it screams, right? So it sounded like there were all these little things, like little tap, 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 like, hey, knock, knock, like, I don't think so. And then finally, it's just like, okay, no, like, I cannot refute this. I can no longer deny that this is just not sitting well with me. And it was similar for me on a more extreme polar opposite end. It was like, my tolerance was through the roof. Like I was drinking so much, but like wasn't able to get drunk. And that was the whole point for me. Like I wanted to feel something. Like you're not drinking to get drunk. You're just, it's a social thing. It's, you know, flavor. But like for me, it was like, I can't even enjoy the impact. I was just getting all of the negative impacts of, or side effects of alcohol. You mentioned anxiety. A lot of people don't realize anxiety is a big part of drinking. Like it creates anxiety too, even on a small scale, if you're having a beer. So I think that's what you may have been experiencing. And I'm wondering for you, Toya. So like you mentioned, Amal, that you gave away your birthday wine. Like you're like, nope. So are you not a big drinker, Toya? Like you weren't like, oh, like what about me? Giving the wine away, like I'll drink it.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about her.
That's funny, and I don't think about it either because, no, I'm not a big drinker, and I'm more of a sweets cocktail type, you know, that's more when we're out, right, because I'm not really at home mixing any drinks here, you know, like, it's just not my habit, so for us, it's more of when we're out, you know, I have a nice little something sweet, a mixed drink, and that's kind of my go-to. I don't even have an allegiance. I literally will ask a bartender, what do you recommend that sweet? Like that's it, because you know that's only when we go out. So of course I had, you know, a cocktail in Orlando for a Podfest, right, when am I gonna have another drink? I don't know, probably the next time we maybe go out to dinner or something, or you know.
I know what you mean.
It's not big for me at all. And wines, I was never really, I called myself, I'm not a true wine drinker.
No, you're not.
Because I want wines, you know.
Yeah,
so I'm not, you know, the dry.
Nadine, we would go to a vineyard, and she would say, "What kind of sweet wines do you have?"
And they're like, "None."
Like, everything is dry and bitter.
That's real wine right here.
You're where's the sugar? Let me just pour some sugar in this.
Oh my gosh! Yes. So for me, it was nothing.
Yeah.
And honestly, years ago, he didn't go into this, but years ago, like he was not like I said, we never really had a lot of drinks at home.
No, we didn't.
But whenever he would go out,
that's when I would drink a lot.
Okay.
He would overdo
shots.
It.
Shots.
Yeah. Yeah, shots. And he'd come home and I'm just like, oh my gosh, how did you even get home?
Yeah.
You know, so so it's like that stuff that we dealt with. So this transition of him, okay, no more beer, no more hard liquor, no more wine. Like for me, I'm like, good.
No problem.
But that was years and years and years ago. Yeah. But still, it's like, and the fact that he would just say, you know, I just don't want it. Like, okay, now I'm not doing this. Now I'm not doing that. And I'm just like, okay. And he never said, well, how about you stop? You know?
Okay.
Like, he never put that on me. But again, I could not drink, really. You know, it's just a social thing for me. Like, literally when we're out. And that's
And keep in mind, like, this two-year process of me realizing that alcohol is, you know, is no longer a part of my life as I'm draining it out of my life, you know, I'm being very sensible. I wasn't getting drunk or anything like that.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like, I could have maintained that level of drinking, you know, because I was much more mature and I was handling alcohol much better. It was just, I was having those attacks.
It wasn't optimizing your life. You realized
that
there was no point for you.
It was not. Yeah. It was something that I, you know, there's circumstances out of our control. You know, I wish the lottery would, you know, be one of those things, but alcohol just happened to hit the jackpot in my life to leave, you know? So, yeah, man.
So it sounded like a natural progression that led you there. Being from the islands, do you feel like just in your environment, you saw more of that happening?
Yeah, I did go to college. Okay. So so college exposed me to, you know, that binge drinking, if you will. Like that's when I was introduced to, you know, taking shots and different types of alcohol and mixing drinks and And, you know,
I call it drinking to get drunk, like to feel something.
Drinking to get drunk. Yeah. And that led from college through my early years in my radio business, you know, because you go to, you know, you're drinking as a competition with the DJs, you know, so it's like, you know, the DJs are at the bar. I'm hosting the club. So we're all going to see who's drinking, you know, the most under the table, you know, and
Like bragging rights, a rite of passage.
Yeah. And I'm respected. I was, you know.
Oh, goodness.
Understood. Yeah, I was the same way. It was bragging rights. It was like, oh, yeah, like, I can drink you under the table. Like, you 6'5" man, like, 400-pound man. Like, I may not look like it, but.
Yeah, right. That metabolism is different in different people, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't feel like it was a physical thing, but maybe it could have been something physical, because some people say that maybe alcohol caught up to me, whatever, but it's like, I just don't know, because, you know, I was being sensible and it'd have been different about still living. Yeah, it's like I had slowed down the drinking and then all of a sudden it was just like
you said, mentioned God, your spirit, like it was just something that was like, no, this is not agreeing with me. And instead of forcing it, you listened and it led you on the right path as far as, you know, permanent sobriety.
Right. It's like, you're not doing this anymore, Ahmad Rashad. I don't care how much.
Exactly.
What about you, Toya? How did alcohol present itself in your household growing up? And do you think it played a role in your relationship with alcohol in later years?
My mom, I really didn't see her drink really at all. The only time I saw my mom drink was around my dad's side of the family.
Okay. They're the fun side, the crazy side.
Oh, man. Yeah. My dad's side of the family, they always had alcohol. Mm-hmm. They was always sipping something. You know, you had uncles that would talk all night because they've been drinking. They would literally be up all night talking. But now my dad, though, I would just see him really drink beer. But around his family, you know, he might have some hard liquor, right?
Okay.
Just some straight, you know, dark liquor or something, but no abuse. I really didn't see anything like that. And I wonder if it would be different if we lived with my dad's family, because they were all in a different state. So that would be us visiting, you know?
It was always party time.
It's party time.
Understand.
From out of town, right? So I just wonder, you know,
what their day-to-day look like.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were here in Texas and it wasn't really a lot of people here.
Yeah.
So kind of us and a couple other cousins, but that was it. Majority of the family was in other states.
Yeah. Your mom really doesn't drink. I remember when I first met you and your mom, like she had this bottle of Southern Comfort. Mm-hmm. And it was like Toy and I met 19 years ago. Bottle today.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be like, wow. You don't look like you met 20 years ago.
Oh, we met in high school.
In high school? You're real funny. Because you told me your meat story.
Just go with it.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Both of your parents were responsible drinkers, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so how did the trajectory of your relationship change from meeting 19 years ago to now, and thinking about the presence alcohol played? Because I know you mentioned briefly, Toya, that like there were times in the marriage or in the relationship where you were going out more, Ahmad, and you would also mention, like, you know, you'd be more on the scene and it was almost like bragging rights, just sort of the culture to like turn up and party, take shots. So like thinking about that, like, what was the shift in the relationship and removing alcohol? How did that change your relationship or your marriage?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I was more productive in the home,
right?
You know, during the weekends, because I was pretty good Monday through Thursday, half day Friday.
Yeah.
But Friday night, Saturday night, you know, twice a month, that's when I would go out, you know, usually on a Saturday night. So it was really two times a month was when I would really go out and do my thing when we were married.
It was scheduled, by the way.
It was scheduled.
It was on the calendar.
You're going out with that cousin.
Oh, God. Not that cousin.
That cousin.
Yeah.
Not that cousin.
Yeah. Here we go.
Party in the box.
That's what they said. Party in the box.
Party in the box. Man, you know? So basically, like, during the week, you know, I took care of my business. Yeah. So that part was pretty solid. And then in the weekends, we would spend time with family, whatever. And I wouldn't even drink that much. So it was really just twice a month, you know, two Saturdays a month, you know, is when I would just get loose. And I felt like, you know what, I'm a good dude, you know, I'm doing the best I can. Hey, you know, why not, you know? But I think even though it was just those two times in the month, they were so dramatic because I would come home at 3 o'clock in the morning and I would smell like, you know, whatever. Ugh. And that stuff lingers over the next 2 weeks, you know? It just creates, it's like, Cause she would know, like, man, I hate that he's doing this every 2 weeks. So she's anticipating the next couple of weeks when I'm getting ready to go out again.
Yes.
So you can, like, there's a little bit of underlining,
like stoking the fire. It's just like, I can definitely see that. You mentioned something about, well, I have my stuff together, you know, Monday through Friday. I deserve this, like I earned this, or like I should be able to like let loose. Right. But it's like, why do we by design feel as though we need we need to be able to abandon ourselves, or we need to lose ourselves? So yeah, from your perspective too, Toya, like what was going through your mind when you saw those two circle calendar dates, like those Saturdays?
So I would, I would have my girl moments, and I call it, cause you know, girly, girly moments where it's just like, if you stay home, then, you know, or you know, just things like that. And I'm trying to figure, you know, and I'm just getting irritated, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, this Saturday we going here, we're gonna do this, we're gonna, and it's just like I would just get irritated. It would always be an argument, you know. But then he'd be like, I mean, I'm good, and that whole thing where he's just like, you know, I've been good all week and going to work, doing my, let me just let loose with my cousin. And I'm just like, fine, you know. But because I didn't do that, you know? So it's just like, I kind of got my feel of going out to clubs, but it's like, now I'm kind of over it. Like, I just want to kick it with him, you know?
Right.
And so, but he's just like, well, let me kick it with you, but then I need to have my night with my cousin. So it's just really frustrating, you know? Because that's not what I enjoy.
Yeah. Understood. You're like, why do you feel the need to let loose with your cousin? And I'm like, I'm cool with being here. I don't need that escapism, because I think to a certain extent it can be a form of escapism. That's the word I was looking for before. Just in general, I hear that a lot, and I would do that too. It's like, you know, I'm keeping everything tight, and then it's like Friday comes, I'm in the streets because that's what I want to do, and I don't know why. Like that's not really like a question, just something that I observe and I hear a lot. But I'm wondering, what is your relationship now with that cousin? Because I think a lot of people talk about in sobriety, relationships change.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, are you still kicking it with this cousin, or?
Yeah, we don't, it's daytime events now. So yeah, so it's more like, hey, let's get together for lunch or something like that, or a family event, stuff like that, because we just don't do the same thing, you know?
And it's really, when he say we, it's really him. Like,
because his cousin's still out here.
Yeah,
I feel like the cousin would still, you know.
Yeah, like if I still want to go
in. If Ahmad called him up now, just like, hey, let's
throw a few back.
I'm ready. I'm ready, bro. I've been waiting for this call for X amount of years.
Everyone matures, you know, everyone matures. So, I mean, I don't know how he is. I don't know how he is today, you know, but. I can't call it, but I just know that he and I were in two different spaces on how we express a good time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think all of that kind of correlates together.
But I will say, really, the change happened too, just with Ahmad's relationship with God. So of course, we got married. He got saved before we got married, and he was baptized. And I was rebaptized the night before we got married. So we didn't do like bachelorette parties. So that's, we got beautiful. Married, but it was still like that, you know, so he was saved, but we weren't like members at a church at that point. So we were just trying to figure it out. And Ahmad was kind of back and forth, like, we can have our own relationship without the church. So we kind of went through that season. But as he got closer to God, I would really say that's when everything started to dwindle. And when I got pregnant with our son, that was really when everything changed.
Yeah. So like our lifestyles just kind of
Completely changed with my pregnancy. And then I had a baby, and then that was it. And then it was like, okay, we're going to find a church. we are going to really just make sure our relationship is good with God. And it was just so, that was also at the time where it'd be months where it's like, okay, I'm not doing this. I'm not drinking this. Okay, now I'm not drinking that. So I feel like it really coincided with his relationship with Christ.
That's beautiful. Since you mentioned being parents now, what messaging do you plan on giving your son around like alcohol? How do you plan on protecting him, but also being real with him about some of like the ills of the world, so to speak?
Right. Yeah, I've already started. Yeah, it's just the way that I'm raising him.
Okay.
Toy and I, we raise our son is we just, instead of forcing him to do what mommy and daddy do or don't do what mommy and daddy does, because, you know, he's going to find out mommy and daddy did some things that we told him not to do, right? So we can't really tell him, like, what to do, right? Mm-hmm. But what we do is we set him up to understand that there are choices in everything that you do.
Yeah.
And I just kind of let him know, like, hey, if you choose to do X, Y, and Z, then this is the path that you can potentially go down, or if you choose this way, blah, blah, blah. So when we get to a point, finally, when we start talking about alcohol, the whole idea of making wise decisions has already been embedded in him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one first time I had a conversation about, what will be a wise decision in this situation? Does it make sense to drink this alcohol and take 6 shots and then get in the car and go home? Do you think that sounds wise to you, you know, or do you think it's wise to kind of leave it alone, don't touch it at all, and just have a good time at the party? So by the time we get to that point, because we're already having those kind of conversations now, where he's in third grade, where he's like, he comes home and he's playing Nintendo Switch, and I'll ask him, okay, you know you have homework. Is it wise? Can you play Nintendo Switch? Or do you think it's wise to do your homework? And he says, do my homework, and then he'll get sad or whatever. And I tell him at that moment, I'm not forcing you. It's your choice. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to school tomorrow, not doing your homework or not. And I, as a parent, and Toya, I love you, but allow me to be like this. I let him go to school without doing his homework.
Honestly, that's one of the best answers I've heard. I'm not a parent, but I think people try to protect their kids. And in doing so, they're doing a disservice to their child because they're not giving them all of the facts of the situation, right? When it's just like, I'm going to make all these decisions for you. But when it's time for you, because eventually everyone will be independent and able to go into the world, you know, if everything's been done for you or all the choices have been made for you, you get lost. You don't know where to start or where to operate or how to maneuver. So I actually think that's really, really impactful and will have longer term benefits and I love that you're doing it with other things that are applicable to his day-to-day life now as he evolves. Like, you know, the decisions are still presented and he has to be the one that makes the choice, because how many times do you probably recall like your parents will say or told you not to do something and it's like, well, you know, you're not here. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Hopefully those decisions, you know, when it comes to that peer pressure and those real decisions, you know, that's when I feel like it's going to show up in his teenage, you know, not necessarily him being polite, you know. It's like when it's time for, when he sees one of his friends do something that he knows is foolish and he has to hold his friend accountable and walk away, you know, like that's when I'm hoping that these lessons of him, like he can't have his Switch today because he made a foolish decision last night. So I'm hoping.
And then the consequence piece, right? Like following through, like you're showing like, okay, you made a choice, but just know every choice has a consequence. And sometimes the consequences are good. Sometimes they're bad. Once going back to this protection idea, right? The sheltering as well, where it's like, it's not a realistic depiction of what will happen in the real world if you pick the wrong choice. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it will have adverse side effects. So I think that's great as well, that there are consequences attached with the decisions that he's making.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm glad you asked that question. And I'm glad we got that out there for other parents to hopefully, you know, because, you know, one thing that we understand is when children get old and they start being exposed to drugs and alcohol, you know, in their preteen, teenage years, a lot of times parents start to parent at that moment. And they
Reactive parenting, not proactive.
even more controlling than what it was when they were toddlers. Because now it's like, you can't go outside, I'm gonna lock your door, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, nope, I'm gonna let you go out there and be a fool. Like I tell my son, it's like whenever he gets upset with me because I tell him no, I'll say, you're not hurting me, you're hurting yourself. I'm giving you wise counsel and you're upset with me. I said, you're not hurting me from doing this, you're hurting yourself. Because the reason why I'm saying that now, because when you become a teenager, if they know that that hurts you when they get upset, they're going to use that against you.
They're going to use that.
Start using drugs and alcohol. We watch these addiction shows. My wife got me watching those addiction intervention shows.
Oh my God, they're so good. It's like, they come up on YouTube for me. I gotta watch the 12 minute clip.
They make me cry on every episode. And it's like, they always start with these teenage kids who are addicted to drugs and alcohol because their parents, you know, never held them accountable when they were kids, you know?
Yeah.
And,
or tried to shelter them too much. There's usually, I find, like, another pattern is like trauma that was never really dealt with. And so then it manifests, of course, because what you don't feel is going to come out no matter what, in one way or another. Like, speaking of trauma, like, if something bad happens to you, it might not necessarily be your fault, but it is your responsibility. And that reminds me of what you were sharing about giving your child a choice. Like, sometimes bad things are bound to happen, and it doesn't mean it's your fault, but you have to take control of the reins and not be powerless in situations. And know that sometimes, like, you're faced with the aftermath. Like, you have to, like, take control of your life, and how you do so is up to you. But, like, a lot of the times people choose destructive pathways instead of, you know, the better things for them.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm glad you brought that out. Child suffering is very important to me to help eradicate that from the earth. So you just hit a deep part of my heart right there. So
good. Okay, I have one more question. Shifting gears. This one. Okay, this is maybe TMI. I told you guys already. I'm celibate. I'm celibate. Right. Celibate for now. I met this woman, and she had said to me, "Okay, like, when you have sex, sober sex, it's phenomenal. It's way better." Did you guys experience that? Did your sex life change?
Yes.
Ahmad smiled. He smiled. I'm just very curious. I hear that, like, it's better because I share this. Like, I have had more drunk sex than sober sex in my lifetime. So I just don't always know. Like, I'm looking forward to something, but I also don't know if it's true. So I'm just curious from someone who has been on both sides. Like, what do you think?
Right. I have a two-part answer, but I'll let you go if you have anything you want to say first.
But most of mine has been sober.
But even with him, like, do you notice, have you noticed a difference? Like, more present?
Okay. Because again, it was years ago when he would be drunk, right?
Yeah.
So yes, it's a lot. Yeah. Yes.
That's good.
Much more conscious, I'm much more present, you know.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yes, you know, to all
you
of
know,
that.
You're not passing out, you know. Right. You know what I'm saying?
And, starting the party and not finishing, just walking away.
Maybe you gotta, you know, you throw up or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no, not that. Yeah, you know?
No, there's a lot of, and this, like, I've read a lot of articles about how drunken sex is just not as satisfying as sober sex. So there's, like, the science that backs it up, you know?
Right.
And like, just drinking just messes with the brain and the memory and all that stuff, the euphoric, you know, all that gets blocked. So you're really just making love with the alcohol. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I've never heard that before, but that's very true.
The most satisfying sex is the path that you're on. If you stay celibate and you wait for marriage,
it's been 14 months. Marriage sex. I told you guys I went on a first date yesterday. I was excited about the first date. Let's do the math. At least 6 months to 9 months plus.
You got to engagement. You better start premarital then, you know, and get done and, like, get married in 12 months if that's important, you know. But and we talk about that, by the way. Like, you can
do you? Okay, so show. Tell us about your show, because we had a really good conversation before. Yeah. I'm open, by the way. I'm not going to completely dismiss what you said, because it has been 14 months.
Congratulations. Seriously, because that is, we totally are for that, and we just feel like your value is high enough for a husband alone. That's how high your value is.
Yeah.
That's how high your value is. Right. And the same thing with a husband. Like his value is high for his wife alone.
Yeah.
That's how valuable you are. And you already put yourself up like that. And I know this goes against a lot of alpha male, whatever. And I'm telling you, man, I will destroy an alpha male philosophy hands down. And I'm beta. And I will tear his philosophy down.
Wait, Tori's shaking her head.
he always says this when we talk to people, like, I'm beta.
But
this man is nowhere near a beta.
You're not giving beta. Like, you're not.
Exactly.
You're really not. You're like, I am beta. That's not beta energy.
I'm alpha only when I hear something that I can stand on top of and defend. You know,
so what's so that? Like, a lot of Kevin Samuels talk, like, a woman's value is not
okay. A lot of the stuff that he said by her. A lot of the stuff that he said that I would agree with, like man woman relationship, but there were some areas that I just totally disagree with, how to treat a woman in a marriage and stuff like that, or how to treat a woman leading to marriage. Totally disagree with that. I'm not a fan of the judging of 5, 6, 7, or 8 or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that, because I don't like any of the extremes. I don't like the extremes that a woman put on a man. I don't like the extremes a man put on a woman. So I feel like both extremes need to be, canceled out, because that's what's causing issues in relationships. I feel like I like you, you like me. And we come together to figure out what works for us.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know? That makes sense. Yeah. I can stand behind that.
Yeah.
What I don't know if I can stand behind is waiting until marriage. Only because I don't have any prospects. Like, and I will say, sobriety has given me the gift of recognizing my value. Because before, I was not there. I was using alcohol to, like, numb. I was using it to give me a false sense of confidence and bravado. So removing that poison from my life has really shown me, okay, like, this is who I am at the crux of, like, my core, my soul, my heart. And I have more self-confidence. And, okay, this is where it gets tricky. Because I want to believe. I know it's true. I just don't know if I'm strong enough, if I'm being honest with you. Because I'm like, I worry. This is my fear. So it's already enough, not a strike. Because, like, for example, the guy I went out with last night, he was actually, like, really excited. He was like, I'm so glad that you're not drinking, and I'm not drinking. This is great. Yeah. But for most guys, it can be a strike. It can be a turn off. That's okay. They're not meant for me. But then to also add celibate on top of that, like, to be like, hey, I don't drink, and I'm waiting for marriage. Yeah.
There you go.
I just worry that, like, and maybe I'm not seeing my true worth yet. Because I just worry that I'm going to not have anyone that's willing to wait for that, you know?
Oh, no, I don't think you need to worry about that at all.
I don't think you have to worry about that either.
No,
I think
no.
You're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to a point where, like, I feel like you've really, like, I think the value that you put on yourself is in the eyes of the beholder, right?
True.
Not in the eyes of the marketplace.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So that's okay.
The philosophy that I disagree with. People are like, the marketplace says this and the marketplace says that. It's like, no, like, you are your own painting. You're a masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right?
You are your own
evergreen.
There you go.
Transcends time.
Yeah. And based off of what you bring to a relationship, then it's up to him to say, hey, I see value in that.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Not you saying, well, in order for him to see value in me, then I have to give something up for him. You see what I'm saying? That's not necessarily true. Now, it could be, if you need to give something up, it'd be stuff like serving or patience and kindness and, you know, treat.
Yeah.
You know, but there are some things of value that you can actually hold until you get a receipt. You don't exchange goods that have been purchased. and you, that's your choice. It's your choice.
I'm smiling because I'm like, dang, I feel like I needed to hear this, but I don't want to hear it. You know, I'm like, dang.
I mean, the thing is this, like, you're right. A man will chase after a woman for a certain amount of time. But if you are putting out the vibe that he can get what he wants in a reasonable time, then it will work for you. So that's what I'm saying. So, like, if you put out on the table, okay, I'm sober. It's like, okay, you're right. You're sober. I'm celibate. Okay, you know, you're celibate. And then you say, but I'm dating for marriage.
Yeah. With intention. Okay. Right. Okay. Okay.
Marriage. Right?
Okay.
Now he's like, well, how soon you want to get married? Well, I would like, if I meet someone who's nice, I think 12 to 18 months is a healthy time frame. Yeah. And I mean, you're mature. You know what you want in life, right?
Yeah.
We're not 18, 19, 20 years old anymore.
Definitely not.
Right?
Right.
And you're making these really good decisions for your life. Right, you know, now, you fought addiction. You know what I'm saying?
Like you did that. That's why I'm like, please. This, like, other is nothing compared to that.
Right. So it's like, you say, hey, 12, 18 months is where I would like to get married. I like you. You like me. Think about it. This is something, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, otherwise, you know, we could just be cool hangout buddies or whatever without the, you know.
Right. Hangout buddies.
Wrong term. Like, you know, I see you on Instagram or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're dating like that, because you're focused, you got your career, you're doing things, right? You don't want to deter any of that for the wrong person.
Wasted energy. Yeah.
Right. Because I mean, you could think about it, your celibacy that you've done for yourself for whatever reason.
It was circumstantial. But now it's a thing. Okay, right.
Think of it like, it's like you're taking a, you know, like you're taking a step back. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, treat it with the same value as you value your sobriety.
Wow. Yeah.
You know?
That's
powerful. Just like, hey, you know what? This is someone I need, someone to respect me for this level. Yeah. And I'm telling you, there are men out there that will respect that, irregardless of what the marketplace says.
That's true.
No, that market analogy is powerful. I'm like, I'm basically crypto. What's that thing that people used to like make up the value of it? Like, people don't talk about it anymore. It's like the little paintings. NFTs. Yeah, I'm an NFT. I'm like,
priceless. You are. You're a non-fungible token.
it weathers every market storm. Right. No, that's like all jokes aside. That's actually really, I think, helpful, and I hope someone takes something away from it. I know I did, and similar to what you were sharing before, Amal, where it's like you don't know necessarily why you were starting to like feel this way towards alcohol. It's like the same for me. I was like, I wasn't necessarily set out to remove sex from my life. But in the process, like, there has to be a greater reason, right? Like,
man, yeah.
There has to be. Like, it couldn't have just been because, like, I'm sure if I wanted to have sex, I could have sex. Like, you know?
Correct.
Like, nothing has worked out. Like, I've not been able to bring myself to, like, go there with anyone. Right. So, there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Right. So maybe you might tap into someone else's value, and they may want to elevate themselves.
Right.
You know, because a man likes a woman who makes him, you know, believe
alpha male. That's alpha male talking. is good for the gander. I don't know if that's a real story. I don't know what that means. I don't even think. I think I conflated two different things. No, but yeah, okay. You got what I was saying.
Well, wow. We're rooting for you.
Thank you. Okay, so like you guys have tons of good advice. Tell us how we can hear more of you and your amazing just wisdom, because I really feel like I took some gems. This took a steer. Like, it was supposed to be about you and somehow ended up about me. thank you so much. Like, seriously, like, this is really relevant. And I, like I said, I think people are going to take something away from this. But how can we get more of you guys? Like, I want to know what's up. Yeah.
You can just check out my Instagram at Toya_marriageadvice. So that is what I do. I just love pouring into relationships and just kind of sharing things that we've gone through and just giving people hope that they can make it, you know? Mm-hmm. So Toya_marriageadvice on Instagram is how you can find me.
Absolutely. And I'm going to send you, Toya, we're going to send you We're going to send you a bottle of this.
Are you really? Thank you. Oh, you were telling me about the spiritless. Amazing. Yeah. I'm going to put you guys in contact too. Thank you so much. Do you know there's not an alcohol-free company, Black-owned alcohol-free company?
You want to start one?
I believe it.
Well, I talked to a girl last week, Ashley Johnson, and she's launching a company called Why Not starting in the spring. She has all the markups ready. So I'll send you guys a bottle of that.
Okay.
She told me that, I was like, what? There's not anything out there. So it's something to consider as well if you were trying to get into a space. We have people like 50 Cent who are promoting cognac, and he doesn't even drink. He's sober. It's like, can we change that narrative, please?
No, he doesn't drink alcohol. Oh,
he does not drink alcohol, and he has a freaking alcohol company. A quick plug. If you want relationship advice, you should probably go to A Married Couple, right? So check out Tori's Instagram because she's giving advice proven and tested from her own personal experience with Ahmad. And I think that is the beauty of, getting advice from someone that knows what they're actually talking about.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.